Hey everyone, this is Jerry Fabianic on KYGT LPFM 102.7, 103.9. Still coming at you live here from the very center of the universe. Rachel, how's it feel to be in the center of the universe?
Well, it's pretty nice out there, and those trees are pretty yellow.
Oh my God, yeah, it's just like you just hit it perfectly up here.
What a
gorgeous day, huh? Yeah, I mean, it's phenomenal. So, yeah, we're going to be visiting here with Rachel Cadenas, and she's an author, international speaker. I'll do all that in just a minute, but before I, really introduce her properly, but just remind everyone, this is the Writer's Talk on the Rabbit Hole. I am sponsoring this particular portion of the programming here, so if you want to learn more about my work, Sisyphus Wins, you go to my website at jerryfabianic.com. I want to thank all our sponsors. Without sponsors, community radio like this and programming like this, conversations like this, not possible. So reach into your pockets. If you want to become a sponsor, donate, go to our website at clearcreekradio.com. And, Rachel, no one knows better how to embrace life's challenges than Rachel herself, overcoming her adversity at being widowed at age 31 with a two-year-old daughter. She wows audiences with her down-to-earth, current, and relevant presentations, helping attendees to reach their potential by embracing and learning from all of life's complexities. Having worked in management for Fortune 100 companies, she is fully aware of the seesaw created when personal and professional challenges collide. Rachel has been speaking passionately to national audiences of all sizes for 20 years, addressing all aspects of change, growth, and acceptance that come with embracing life challenges. Those expected and unexpected, she's sure to inspire, inform, and persuade you to be self-aware, take action, and continue to thrive. Rachel, thanks for making the trip here.
Well, I'm going to have to live up all to that in the next hour, and I think I can.
All right. Yeah. And because that loss, let's start off, and I want to come back to what moved you here, because others, you had this tragedy early in your life. Others have as well, and what moved you to get into this type of speaking and, writing your book, et cetera. But before we do that, I want to talk about loss itself, because when I talk to people, invariably we put it in context of loss of another human being. Could be a spouse, in your case, certainly, a family member, close friend, whatever. But it seems to me loss is more than that.
Well, it took me a while to figure out what loss was. And again, I was 31 when my husband died, and we will talk about that in detail. But what I really want to respond to about what you're saying about having loss, what we don't understand with each other and giving each other a little bit longer of a leash when we go through our own personal tragedies, tragedy could be, as you said, it could be divorce. It could be loss of a job. 5 years ago, we had a horrendous flooding that went through Colorado. Those people lost their homes, their professions, their roads. There's loss is permanent in many ways, because if we go back to the floods, they lost all their personal belongings. They can't get those back. Some people don't like to compare belongings, animals, and people. Totally understand, but we can't really determine what your reaction to loss is versus my reaction to loss. To me, loss is, it's really in the eye of the beholder. And what really got me into working with loss is, by profession, I'm IT telecommunication, as you had mentioned, that I am Fortune 100 companies. And my husband and I both work for Sprint, and he just suddenly died walking out of work. It was arrhythmia, missed a heartbeat, never came home. It took me a long time to realize what that meant to me. And I know that's kind of a strange comment that I made. Of course, it meant to me that I had an empty bed. It meant that I am now a single parent. It meant that I had to find my future. There was so much that my marriage, my love of my life was gone. But what it took me 18 years to realize was that I wasn't the poor, pitiful, sad widow. I was the fortunate one to be here and be able to see these beautiful trees in Idaho Springs, that I'd be able to see my daughter graduate high school and college and et cetera. He's the one that really missed out on everything. And when I was able to flip that, I was able to help other people, even writing my book, and help understand that we can't change what happened to us just like the floods. We can't change that, but we could change the way we look at it. Does that make sense?
It does. It makes a lot of sense. And so you took this then, this epiphany.
Correct.
Moment here and said, okay, what do I do with it then? Okay, it's a great ha-ha moment for me. On the other hand, you've gone far beyond now.
So, and that I have, and that epitome that I had was well into while I was working with people. So, of course, their attitudes and their reaction to their own losses made me look at something slightly different. So, when I met my deceased husband, my late husband, here in Colorado, and then we moved for corporate America. And when my goal was to come back here. I just wanted to get back to Colorado. This is where I belonged. Jerry, as you know, I'm an athlete. I love being up in the hills. I do believe in my former life I was a mountain goat. Not sure, but I believe so.
I understand that, too. I just talked to Tanir, your husband. And, yeah.
So yeah. I definitely love that aspect of being here, and I wanted to come back. And when I came back, the whole notion of IT and telecommunications, while I was a woman in the late, you know, in the 80s trying to break that glass ceiling, I really wanted to break that glass ceiling. And I lost a little bit of motivation through my loss and realizing, growing up fast, because at 31, when you're widowed, you grow up really fast. And so what I really wanted to do was find something else that had a little bit more meaning. And I wrote an article, Don't Ask, Just Do. Because I was so sick of people asking me what they could do for me. Because if I knew, I'd be able to tell them.
Yeah.
So it was just a simple article that said, open your eyes. You could see what people need. Go cut my grass, even though someone else might have cut it. Just see what I need. And that went as viral went in the late 90s. You know, there wasn't really the viral of now. And I got a call from Bereavement Magazine, which was a publisher, Bereavement publisher. And they asked me if I could help them with grief in the workplace. And I understood why they asked me was because I came from corporate America, and nothing against clinical people. It's just be able to talk to HR and to the CEOs. All they want to know is when. They want answers to specific questions. They don't want to be coddled. They don't want to be told everything's going to be okay. They don't even want to approach their bereavement leave policies. All they want to know is when is this employee going to be back and how do I talk to them? So I wrote this program in support of corporate America, and it's really for coworkers and managers, not necessarily for the griever, because there's information out there for the griever. But it was how, Jerry, if you have to go back to work and somebody's had a traumatic loss, what do you say to them? How do you behave? Yeah. What is the best way of handling this? Or as a manager, how much workload do you get? How do we ease in the transition when they come back? What do we say? What do we do? That type of stuff. So that's how I got myself both using corporate America as well as my grief and loss. And so that continued to transition till I still worked on building a grief and loss center and running support groups on a weekly basis. I like my demographics. The majority of my demographics are under 65, but that does, I mean, we're all creeping up in age, including me. So I seem to be creeping up with my demographics.
Which is a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. Especially on the topic we're talking about. Absolutely. And I feel that there is so much life out there and we just forget about it. And that's where I try to transition my emotions, transition my support, transition my speaking. We need to embrace the life's challenges, whether they're expected or not. We need to embrace them so we can be able to live life to the fullest. I miss Rod. I'm remarried, as you just talked about me, you know, spending time with my I call him living husband. I miss everything about it. I love looking at my daughter and seeing my late husband in her and every move she makes, but I can't bring him back. So I could sit in a room by myself in the dark, or I can live.
Yeah, and it's amazing. You know, which we're touching, what was going through my head is that when we're talking about loss, there's the individual right up front, right there. If it's in the case of a spouse whose husband, wife is maybe dying of cancer, okay, right there. Yours was a very sudden experience right there. But in the ones that's going through the, we'll put it this way, the ordeal, they're the caretaker. They're the immediate ones there. Then there's this surrounding group of his or her closest friends, relatives, you know, maybe brothers, sisters that are there also trying to be supportive of him, her, and everything. And one thing that I learned, because I had a couple of close friends about 10 years ago dying at the same time, and they were both relatively young. One was just turned 50, the other one was 57, and they both got cancer, dying at the same time there. And what I discovered was, my epiphany, was that the caretakers need care taking, because they're in such, you know, so the immediate one right there, whether it's the spouse, and because they're getting drained every day, they're putting all their energies into it. But then there's the others around there too, and they don't realize how much is being, quote, sucked out of them, you know, into this endeavor here of helping this person transition over whatever. And so that's it. And then I want to come back to the third one, and that is the, like, going back to work. And then those people like, oh, okay, Rachel just came back, and how do I talk to her, sort of thing there. At any rate, I'm kind of rambling.
I'll catch you. I'll bring you back, honey. Right. I'll bring you back.
Job. That's right. You're the job. So,
I want to talk about this whole notion of caregiver anticipatory loss. First, I want to talk about people saying how the difference of an anticipatory loss, which is a terminal illness, and it could last a month, it could last a week, it could last 10 years.
Yeah.
So those are different than where Mead was a sudden loss at a young age, accident, homicide, suicide, which is huge, you know, all of those. Those are sudden and they create a shock, a different type of shock. Nothing you could do about it. There's no goodbye. For me, you have to spin the story any way that works for you. So for me, my husband, if he had to die, dying suddenly is the best for me. For me. And remember, I've spent 25 years spinning that story that to work for me. Although, of course, I would want to say goodbye. Of course, I would want to like to know whether or not he had stuff at the dry cleaners or what was on his desk, or he died on April 14th, if he actually mailed my tax return. Like, you want to ask all those questions. But after all these years, my outlook on it is that I'm thrilled that he didn't suffer.
Right.
But those who have a terminal illness, there's a piece of it that their loved ones love that they get to be with this person for as long as possible. So I understand all that. As far as the caregiver, the most important person in a caregiving patient situation is the caregiver. I know that sounds odd and people balk at me when I'm presenting, but the most important person, if you are a caregiver, is you. And the reason being, if you don't eat, if you don't sleep, if you don't take care of yourself, mm-hmm. you can't do your job.
Yeah.
That patient, it's okay if that patient is in that bed without eating for an extra hour. They'll be okay. They'll be okay. If their meds are 15 minutes late, they'll be okay. But if you can't take care of yourself, or if you don't take care of yourself, then you won't have the opportunity to take care of that person. It's very exhausting. We could spend our next 3 hours talking about how to make that less exhausting, or, you know, share the wealth of the challenges, you know, pointing a point person, having someone in charge of medical, having someone in charge of the house, having someone in charge of the hygiene. You could divide that up so your primary caregiver doesn't have everything, which it seems to work under the, you know, if you just divide it up. Because the primary caregiver wants to be with their loved one most of the time. If they could take pieces off of it, they get more time. So I think I've kind of shared with you my views on the caregivers. Like I said, we could talk about that for 2 hours. If you could just, for the listeners, if they just remember the most important person in the equation is the caregiver themselves, then maybe they could look at it a little bit differently.
Yeah, and that's a tough emotional, not even an intellectual leap, but a tough one for many of the people, but it needs to be made.
Well, I have my aunt that's going through it right now. Her husband has Alzheimer's and young, so he's young doing this, which is really, his body looks like he is in his late 60s, but his brain is, you know, other places. And I think until she realized she could have help, or she knows, like, learned how to ask help for help, it's not that it's bad that she did that. You know, she had to get there. She had to get there to have people help coach her and say, you need to be with your husband, read him a story, be there for love. You don't need to be walking him to the bathroom all the time or changing the sheet if there's an accident. Let somebody else do that. You do just be there for love and care.
And I've been in both situations with, in fact, with the two friends that were dying, the one spouse was very open to others coming in and helping and separating so that he can go and do other things and just kind of recharge his batteries. The other one, though, was very controlling, and it was just like, you don't even touch him. You don't even, you know, I have to do all this. To do
exactly.
This. And you just felt frustrated by that, you know, because you want to help, and yet there's this pushback. And how do you react to that? What do you suggest, you know?
I think people have to learn it on their own time frame, and that I think when somebody, a loved one, like if my sister told me what I should do, I would poo-poo her. But if a professional or if, like when I went through my situation, okay, if one of my sisters had said to me, Rachel, you should or shouldn't do this, I would poo-poo them because how do you know? But if another person that has walked in similar shoes came up to me or a professional in that line of business came up to me and said, you know what, Rachel, my suggestion to you would be blah, 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 I think that I would react and listen more. And I think what happened with my aunt that I was speaking with, she started to get a little bit of home help. And then what she did was, oh, okay, that wasn't so bad. Let me get a couple more hours. And then the professionals will say to her, you know, you need to go out today, come back in 4 hours. And she'd come back in 3 hours and 59 minutes.
Yeah.
But she had 3 hours and 59 minutes to herself. And that's a lifetime when you're a caregiver.
And what do you say then? The other aspect is, okay, so someone has just endured this. We know, you know, Rachel or whoever's been off work now due to whatever, a loss of some sort. And it could be, you know, like you say, an anticipatory type of thing. They're helping their husband, wife, whatever. It could be their son or daughter, okay, which might even put a different spin on it because now it's a child rather than an adult side. Or like you mentioned about the floods. Okay, house just got wiped out. I mean, look at what's happening in Carolina right now. This sort of thing there. And then they come back into the real world. And I am a coworker. I'm not particularly close in terms of bosom buddies, but we get along. And I want to be compassionate and, you know, reaching out and everything. Yet I don't know what to do. I don't know what to say. How do you help those people move forward from that, like, I'm stuck in this place here, to, like, it's okay, do this, whatever. What do you say?
So I have a lot of tricks I keep in my back pocket, and I do go into companies and do training. My perfect world is to be able to train all of corporate America in a different way than they're getting right now, and I don't mean to be rude again on that, that just so that you know, like, part of just life education, and this is what you could do for another human being when they're experiencing something. And the biggest piece of that is do not compare your situation to their situation. And I really feel strongly about going into corporate America and say that, because if the manager lost their mom and I lost my mom, who's to say what happens behind our closed doors? So just because maybe she was able to go, the manager was able to go back to work in 3 days, how do you know that other people like me can go back? I have four sisters. There's five of us. So, you know, there's responsibilities that are getting, we get divide and conquer. What if somebody else is responsible for everything, including this, like their dad? There's just so much that we don't know, that to pigeonhole a type of a loss into one aspect and how we're going to manage it, I think is just, I think we're fooling ourselves. So my suggestion to managers, coworkers, is to, the perfect world, to get education before something happens. But then again, when something happens, because we don't always live in a perfect world, is I suggest to the managers they meet with the person that is returning to work before they come back to work. So the first day, Jerry, if you've had a situation, you're out, and you need to come back on Monday, April 5th, let's say, I'm going to meet with you the Friday before, Thursday before, and I'm just going to feel you out. I'm going to tell you a little bit what you missed. Depends how long you're out and all that, right? So that way, the initial walk in, it's not like, boom, I have to see everybody. The other thing that I suggest to coworkers is reach out to the person that has had a loss prior to them returning to work. Food, send food over. You don't have to go visit them, send food over. I'm not a flower girl. I could tell you why. It's only because they die. So send over food. Send over my book, which we'll talk about in a little bit. Send over, just cut their lawn. Do something for them. So when they come back to work, I could say to you, Jerry, I'm sorry I missed you when you stopped by, but we really appreciate the bagels you dropped over. So the interaction, that first interaction, you're not saying, I'm sorry for the loss. You know, it was a big difference because you, when, if I see you when I first walk into work and it's a, and you say to me, I'm so, you could have said it anyway, but it gives, you'll say, Rachel, I'm sorry for your loss, but I'm going to be able to respond with, Jerry, thanks for coming to the funeral, or Jerry, thanks for the bagels, or Jerry, thanks for that lovely card, or Jerry, thanks for that donation in support of my husband and to so-and-so organization. It just makes that initial piece so much easier for both sides.
Yeah, and what about even making a, I'm empathetic, and because I lost my mother, you know, 30 years ago. And, you know, I got friends now losing their parents. And so my comment oftentimes is, I understand what it's like to lose a parent. Now, their experience is going to be very different than mine. I get that. And there's no expectation, but just the empathy.
So
is that a healthy thing or not?
Well, it is if it's said right. So for me, it's like if somebody said to me, you know, I lost my mom too, thank you, because I can understand that empty. But just you have to really be careful not to say, I understand what you're going through. I know exactly how you feel, like the I's.
Right, right. Oh, yeah.
Okay, because it's really about them, and they have to get where you are. You're 30 years out from your loss, and you have put it into perspective for you.
Okay.
They're not even 1 second into putting it in perspective, right?
Right.
So when I lost my mom 12 years ago, I had two sisters that had babies still, and I couldn't put it in the same perspective as them, and that's my family, because to them, that my, so we all lost the same person, but to them, my daughter met her grandmother, my younger sisters, their children will never remember grandma. So it's totally out of context, perspective, even though we both lost a mom.
Yeah.
So just the carefully not to compare, ever to compare. Right. Just say, you know, just, I know it's a world that we can't touch each other anymore. We shouldn't touch each other, but I do think that we can in some ways. Even if you just grabbed their arm and squeezed it with no words, but I mean, you got to be careful with that because not all grievers like to be touched. Right. I'm a hugger. I'll hug anybody, but not everybody's a hugger.
Yeah, and a lot of times, I guess you just have to kind of feel your way on that too, in a sense, but always be sensitive too. But at the same time, and this is not maybe not a fair analogy, that as a classroom teacher, if a student came in who had an obvious physical disability, that was not something that kept the kids apart. But if there was a student that came in who was really quiet, or, you know, apparently had some type of disability, you know, in a psychological sense, the kids didn't know how to deal with them. So they would avoid it.
Right.
You know, rather than do the wrong thing, you just avoid it. And well, then they start to feel shunned and everything, too. So it's tough.
But that's a really good point you bring up, because not even in children, adults, if you wait too long to respond to somebody's loss, it gets awkward. And I will tell you, even me, I think I write the, right things in cards. I think I say the right things. I think I do all of that. But I'm probably just as guilty as everybody else that you say, because there's no cookie cutter thing to do. So I could say to you, Jerry, oh, I'm so sorry. But I could try to feel your pain, but I can't. Even if I wanted to, I wouldn't be able to. Does that make sense?
Oh, totally, yeah. And when we first started talking, I think the phrase you used was something about allowing them a leash, you know, that person who's going through. And I think we're talking about that there. But just, you know, in other words, give them space. Don't make assumptions just simply because, all right, they expected their husband had terminal cancer. They gave him 6 months and he made it five. So, okay, great, you know, and then he's bounced back. Because to me, what I learned was, it doesn't matter how much you are prepared for the end, because both of my friends, they, that was pretty obvious. It was going to be within days, weeks, whatever. But until that final breath, you know, and then once it happens, it's like the whole world changes. Everything gets flipped upside down. And I don't think you could prepare for that. So
I think we are, as a society, we judge people too easily or too fast, I guess would be the appropriate term. And it's not negative that we do. We just think that we understand what they're going through. So here I was, this corporate woman. I had all these people working for me. I had a big job and a sane brain. And I lost my brain for a little bit through emotions. I just lost it a little bit. And there's things that I said and did that when I look back on it 20-something years later, that what kept me up at night, so what kept me up at night when my husband died was who was going to walk my daughter down the aisle. She was two. But Jerry, you can't take that thought away from me. If that's what woke me up at night, that's what woke me up at night. And when I run my groups and I do my presentations and I listen to what people keep people up at night, it's who they are and the way they look at it. But you could look at me and say, Rachel, why do you think that way? And you could try to logically take that away from me, but that's where I went.
Yeah.
And we just respond so differently. And until that logic comes back, you can't convince anybody from that. I mean, I've been through with enough widows, the judgment of if they're dating, they're not dating, when they dated too soon, who they're dating, what they want. Well, you know, at 55, 60 years old, if you lost your spouse, it doesn't matter what relationship you get in. You will love your spouse forever, forever. And it's like, but we all have the right to be happy. So if being with another human being and sharing your life and not eating alone and doing all that is what makes you happy, who cares?
Yeah.
But we care. We place judgment on people all. Well, we do a divorce too, but you know.
Mm-hmm.
But to tell you the true story about writing my book, Living with Loss One Day at a Time, as I spent time with running support groups and talking to just all types of people that are, you know, I've been in a lot of national groups, National Alliance for Grieving Children, Camp Widow. I could go on and on. TAPS, you know, when I spent time with all these people that have different circumstances around their loss, I came to the common denominator, and that was we have no choice but to live with this loss the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And that we could take that, we could approach that in two different ways. We could take that with our lives are just as short as maybe our loved ones. We could take it as there's a lot to live. There's a lot of just happiness out there. Or we could just go into our corner and not come out of our room. So that's why I named my book Living with Loss One Day at a Time. And I always knew that I had a book in me. And seeing that we're in, what did you call Colorado,
the center of the universe.
Center of the universe. Since we're in the center of the universe, we ski. And when we ski, sometimes the moguls win when there's an accident, and sometimes they don't. But this case, mine did. And I was home for 12 weeks. And I had a book in me. I had been taking notes forever of what people said to me. Presentations, questions that people asked. And so when I was home and my living husband said to me, he comes home from work and he said, you're quoting Oprah. And I'm like, I am not quoting Oprah. And he said, you are quoting Oprah. So you know what that means? Your TV's on and you're not that type of person to have a TV on. So I said, you know what? I'm going to write a book. So I took all the notes and I will tell you that I struggled like most people that try to figure out how their book should, what it should look like. And I'm not one that will start typing first because I'm an organized, timeline, project planning kind of person.
Just the opposite of me.
Okay. And I just wanted to put my arms around what it looked like before I wrote it. And I didn't want a memoir. I mean, there's wonderful, beautiful memoirs out there, but I'm a helper to somebody. And I know that memoirs do help people, but I wanted something that was really more people could take away. I didn't like receiving flowers when my husband died because who takes care of them and they die too? You know, the donations to different causes are wonderful, but I wanted something that was to be handed to me that maybe I wasn't ready for, but I would be one day. So I had all these notes and I came up with, I will have 365 days. This is not religious. This is not devotional. It's a kind of a concept, but it's not any of that. What it is real life.
Mm-hmm.
So my philosophy on the whole loss was, it is really, as the title says, living with loss one day at a time. And that if somebody tells me that in 365 days or 422 days, I need to be over this, it's not. It's a lifetime. So I'm not going to believe you from there, and I don't want my other people to believe me. But what I realized and what I wanted to tell people was, it's not something that you could turn a switch on. It's just that you have to just start building yourself a little bit every single day so that when you see that the sun is coming up and you see the sun setting and you see it for what it is, you will keep getting a little bit stronger. You'll put it a little bit more in perspective. So what I like to tell when people say, well, what's the book about? I like to say on some days I'm really nice to my readers, and I say you could sit on the couch, you could eat bonbons, you could watch trashy TV, you could read a trashy magazine, but you have today to do that. And other days I tell them they have to have one meal outside of the house tomorrow.
Okay.
So why I say that is because, Jerry, you have to make a phone call, you have to make a plan, you have to get up, you have to get dressed, you have to drive there, or hike there, whatever you get there. And then what do you do when you get there? You converse with somebody and you go home and you say, that wasn't so bad. Mm-hmm. So organically, you're working through your loss because you come home and you say, oh, that's not so bad, I'll do it again next week. Now, if I said to you, Jerry, in my live form and not my book, if I said to you, Jerry, you know, you really should get out of the house and have a meal with someone tomorrow, you'd poo-poo me.
Right.
But when you do it yourself mm-hmm. and you do it like that, you're empowered mm-hmm. and you're working through your loss and you don't even know you're doing it.
Okay, and so you're giving yourself permission yourself, and you're not, you know...
You're not making someone else tell you what you should and shouldn't do.
Yeah, and to, you know, because it seems to me then when you approach it that way, you're suggesting to the individual, you're understanding where they are, okay, and we all move through grief at different paces, and what's going to help us through, and some of us sometimes never get over it. We're addicted to it, but others most, you know...
But there's nothing to get over. There's nothing to get over because my daughter is still a spitting image of, and you know what, Jerry, we don't get over our grandparents. Like I miss my grandmother's cooking. There's nothing to get over. It's just something that you just have to change your look at it, outlook on it.
Yeah. And thank you for that, because I could talk about my mother and we laugh about the times and everything. And because I was a smart ass when I was a kid too. Imagine that, right?
I couldn't even imagine that would be true.
Oh my God. And we would start zigging each other, you know, when I was a teenager, early adult. And the one time she would get me was when everybody was around. And she would just
bust get you back.
Head. Oh, she did. And yeah. I mean, she just kind of, and she would just giggle and walk away, you know, that sort of thing. And I remember, and I can laugh about that. But she always said, and I'll start joking up here, that whenever you see a pink cloud, I'll be on it. And so if I'm out running like you are, early in the morning in particular, and you see that alpine glow up here and I see that pink cloud, I get emotional.
Okay, so two things I want to say. For the listeners that cannot see Jerry right now, you should see the love that he has on his face. Now I'm going to make him cry. The second thing that I want to say, that's why I try so hard in my presentations and lectures to mm-hmm. help, especially like your family members, not necessarily the griever, but also the people around you. Yeah. There's nothing to get over here. Absolutely nothing to get over here, because you want that pink clouds. And if you were to get over this, there would be no pink clouds.
Right, exactly.
And so for me, I like those. That's why I call it living with loss one day at a time, because this is something that you're going to live with, but it's, I can't change the past. I can help change the future. And that's what I want, like, to give to my audiences and to my readers.
Now, I want to remind our listening audience, this is Jerry Fabianic on KYGT, LPFM 102.7, 103.9. We're on Writer's Talk on the Rabbit Hole here, visiting with Rachel Cadenas about her work, Living with Loss, One Day at a Time. Very powerful conversation here, you can say.
Yes.
You know, I'm feeling it myself. But I want to, you know, we talk about your book itself. So, you know, in there you had said about how you'll, you know, tell someone, okay, today you can read the trashy, you know, and eat junk food, whatever, but, you know, tomorrow, you know, you need to go out for dinner or something like this. So it prods them on. Talk about the format of the book itself. Is it like the structure in terms of the reading? Is there opportunities for someone to offer, I mean, to journal or anything like that? You know, that sort of thing.
So you have great questions. And if we have time, I wouldn't mind reading one of the days. It's formatted in 365 different what I call lessons and thoughts and loss. There's no beginning, there's no end, there's no January, there's no December. It doesn't matter if you're 3 months out from your loss or 5 years out from your loss. It doesn't matter any of that. It's just to give you ways of staying connected to your loved one. It talks about every day is something different. Another example of a day is, you know, cook the meal of your loved one, the favorite meal of your loved one today. And it's so heartwarming to go to the grocery store and cook something that they absolutely loved. And then you sit down, whether it's a glass of wine or a cup of tea, whatever you your liquid choice is, and you just embrace that person. So every day is something different. One of the days I say play hooky and go to a movie. And my book has been, and the reason why I'm pulling this one out to explain it to you is that I didn't, when I wrote this, I wrote it for any type of loss. And what I found is it's become very family oriented because people say, I don't know what to say to my children. I don't know how to understand what they're going through. But if you go through each day with them, and one of the days I say, play hooky, go to a movie. So just think about this, a family, whatever generations there are, grandmother right down to little children, they play hooky and they go to a movie. They get to go out for ice cream or pizza or something afterwards, and they talk about the movie. Then you could pull in, let's say they lost their father. Which character do you think dad would like? Do you think dad would have liked the movie? Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, you're talking about the person that you've lost in a warm, loving, not a sad way, but a warm, loving, and they're there with you.
Yeah.
So again, it's keeping that person alive with you emotionally. Because when I think about some of the movies that I go to, I would like... There's so many things that I say that Rod would be in shock that this is how far we got, not to mention the electronics or the fact that Colorado has legalized pot. Whatever it is, it's just right? But that's a great conversation to say, I wonder if Rod was alive, what would he think about this? And, you know, what would he think about that? And blah, blah, blah. So I think it's that's what my book has offered, is that each day is, as I said earlier, kind of an organically way of working through your loss but embracing your loved one at the same time.
And then let's move it over. We were talking earlier that loss doesn't necessarily just have to be a person. It could be your house got worked, you know, you lost a career or whatever it is. On Monday, it'll be 11 years since I put my dog to sleep.
And I'm going to tell you a story about that one.
Okay. So it's a very emotional, powerful day for me. And he's still with me. You know,
my old chocolate.
And we'll never be separated. You know, he's at the Rainbow Bridge waiting for me, I guess. I don't know. But what's your story on that?
Okay. So I do write a blog, and people can get on my website and do that, read that. And I do like to write on pet loss. Now, this is coming from a woman that's sitting in the chair across from me that has never had a pet in her life. Okay, so that's what I think makes it even a little bit more strong of what I'm going to share. When my husband first passed away and I went back to work after taking a month off and I came in the door, and again, remember, I was IT telecommunications, a lot of guys. I had one woman that worked with me. And this gentleman came up to me and he said to me, Rachel, I know exactly what, first of all, you don't ever compare, right? I know exactly what you're going through. I just lost my dog. Couldn't talk to this guy. I know I'm looking at your face, and I'm assuming what your listeners are thinking right now. But wait till I get there, okay? Give me a minute.
Okay.
So I looked at him, and I walked away. Again, this is a woman that has never, ever, to this day, has had a pet. And I thought, how can he compare it to me? Let's go forward, fast forward. For my 20-plus years that I've been presenting and listening to people's stories and writing, etc., this is my moral of my story. Who am I to say, Jerry, you losing your pet, is your dog, is any different than me losing my husband? Because how do I know your bandwidth for emotion? How do I know your bandwidth for strength? Mm-hmm. How do I know your bandwidth for anything else? If that dog loved you unconditionally when you walked in that door, that dog slept on your bed, that dog ate every meal with you, how do I know your empty heart is any different than my empty heart? Logically, I could say there's a difference between a dog and a human, but emotionally, I don't think I have the authority, the right to do that to you, to me, or any of your listeners.
That's very profound.
It took me a long time, and I do like to share that because I can't even fathom that a pet would be the same as my husband, but it's not right for me to tell you to even think that.
Yeah, and because I tell the story that I put a deck on the back of my house, and the reason I put the deck on was so that his name was Knox, because he was getting up in years, and the only way you can get in my house was up steps. And I figured, well, if I put a deck on the back, he can walk up around the back and come in. And it worked. Okay, so, and then the friend who helped me build it and designed it and everything, a year after, 2 years after we had the deck done, I put Knox to sleep on the deck, and a year after, my friend died of cancer.
Wow, see, it's just crazy. Isn't it crazy?
It is. And so when I, you know, people come and look, and I go, there's a story behind all this. So it's not only the deck, but the what I did in my yard and everything, too. Because of, you know, that emotion that came into play and those connections between that experience there, to me, it was a simple thing. Okay, I'm going to build this here. But then to put the dog to sleep, and then the guy who helped, my closest friend, you know, one of my closest friend, dies of cancer too. And so their memory right there in there. And so I could tell that story. But again, going back to your point there, how do I know what's the emotional bandwidth someone has? How does that impact them? That, and so that's why I say it's very profound when you, you know, to move from that point where the man comes in and says, I know how you feel. I just lost my dog. And you're going like, you just lost your dog. I just lost my, you know, okay.
Right.
But then be able to move, step back from it and say, you know what? He was hurting. And he did understand.
He did. His picture of the pain. But I can't understand what anybody else's pain is. I can't. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I could try to say that I understand a little bit. And that's why I say I like to grab people's arms, even though we're not supposed to touch right now. Because it's just the feeling that you're just hugging them without a hug.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, that's a really... When you were writing this, okay, and then after, rewarding moments. What was that like, okay, when you were in the process and then after you give a presentation, you know, somebody comes up. I don't know. What are some of the experiences there?
So what I love most about the fact that I published this book is the emails and the phone calls and the response I get from my readers, because it gives them a safe place to share their emotions with me. So I have to tell you, I get gifts in the mail sometimes of, like, I recently got a little bit of a rock heart. I just love how my testimonies, I could probably say that's what warms my heart the most. The other piece that actually that I didn't see coming when I wrote it in the format that I did, I have there's space on the bottom of every page, and people read the day and they journal underneath it. So people that really want to journal, they journal about the subject of the day. And like I said, if we have a minute at the end, I'll read one of them. Okay. So I do. That was an aha for me.
Okay.
The other aha for me was maybe not aha, but the warm, tender moment. When I came up with the 365 days, my editor, the publisher and the editor said to me, we know you're going to repeat yourself. And I was thrilled that they couldn't find one that was a repeat at all. Right.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
And so that was kind of interesting. I just love the response that I get. I know a lot of them are gifts because when they buy them off my website, I am able to sign them, and I know that I'm sending them because I put a gift card in there, so I'm sending them as a gift. So I know that that's a piece of it. But there's many funeral homes in across the United States that buy bulk, and then what they do is they give it to each family. And for their $15.95, which they get probably a discount through the publisher, it's so much better than a $75 flower arrangement.
Yeah.
Because, your listeners can't see the cover, but it's very upbeat. It's got a sun on it because every day the sun comes up. It might be cloudy, but the sun comes up every single day.
Yeah. And I'm just imagining, that while we're moving through this conversation, because everybody's listening, almost everybody, I can't say it's 100%, has experienced loss. Okay, in some way.
They have. They just don't know. Yeah. Or they're not admitting to it.
Exactly. And sometimes we kind of sweep it under. It's no big deal. And I'm tough and all this other stuff there. But, you know, when it's out there and we take ownership of that. But it's not only how we're dealing with it ourselves. But then when we're in that secondary role of being the caretaker or the tertiary role of the caretaker, that sort of thing, or we're an associate of or a neighbor of, you know, that sort of thing. But then to really start getting our minds around the whole concept of loss itself and what it entails. So as we agreed that it's not just about people, it can be about pets, it could be about your house, it could be about a career, it could be a marriage, you know, this person you for whatever. Okay, but how that plays out, because how it impacts me in my particular experience, it could be completely different for someone else. And for us to get our heads around this sort of thinking here is something I think we need to start really working on as a people here, because we tend to put it in pigeonhole, we box it, you know, my point of view, I don't know.
We tend to be victims. We tend to be victims, and that's the best way I could describe it. And I was a victim, and that was my aha moment at my daughter's high school graduation. Was I was crying. I've got one child, and I was crying so hard. And I had my deceased husband's parents on my left, and I had my living husband's parents on the right. And I'm crying like, and somebody said to me, Rachel, you could handle this empty nest. Rachel, you can handle all this. And it was nothing to do with that. It was my moment that I said, oh my gosh, for so long I thought I was the widow, and he's not here. I am so fortunate to be here, and he's not. So it's, victim's a strong word, but look it up and find some softer words that mean victim. But that's what we feel, is that, like, that's why I like my presentations. I have one of my popular presentations is Embracing Life's Challenges. And what I like about that is we could look at a fender bender. We could get ourselves so upset over a fender bender. I get it's $1,000. I totally get it. Nobody wants to spend $1,000. But it's a fender bender. Yeah. It was a stupid thing. It was a fender bender. You can't change that it already happened. But for some people, that's a year, 6 months. So all I ask is to put it in perspective. You got caught off going on the highway. I could tell you last week you cut somebody off. And that's the biggest thing that I try to say sometimes, is that how many times have you gotten on the highway clueless of what you're doing?
Yeah, one of these days you're going to come back and we're going to talk about this whole victim concept here. I don't know if you ever read Carolyn Meese and her works. But at any rate, she deals with the archetypes. And within everyone is this idea of victim. And to me, it's just become on steroids in our culture anymore, you know, that how I've been offended, hurt, or whatever, without realizing how many people I've hurt and do along the way.
I said earlier, Jerry, that I think that I should write a very decent condolence card. I think that I should say the right thing to you. But even with all my years, all my writing, all my presentations, I can't say that I say the right thing all the time. I try to do the best that I can. But I might trigger something, because in my heart of hearts, I'm trying to let loosen the pain. We're not malicious people. We are not malicious people. We just don't know what to do all the time. And it comes out wrong.
Like the Buddha said, just do your best.
I'm doing my best. And I still try to do my best. And I know, I don't want to say for a fact, but I feel pretty confident when I leave the podium, I've offended at least one person.
All right. And that's probably a good thing, by the way, too. So
right.
You promised to do a little bit of reading here. I'd love for that.
I just want to read one, and I don't know why while we're talking. I think some of this is just why I'm choosing this particular day to... something about it while we were talking. It's part of the victim. It's part of sharing with... not the audience necessarily, it's sharing with the people that are around you where you are. So for some reason, don't ask me why it's day 88. It's just the way it fell into the math. And it's what I titled it is Grief is a Refuge or a Battlefield. And the reason why I'm choosing this one is because we went to some profound discussions earlier, and I think this is a profound way of looking at loss. So grief is a refuge or a battlefield. I found grief to be a refuge, a safe haven where I could be with my deceased husband. I was protected from the outside world as I hid in my personal shelter with him. Our sanctuary to be alone together where only we could understand the pain. The world outside my sanctuary was like a battlefield, a combat zone of my thoughts and my emotions, where I hung at the front line, being attacked by the people closest to me, hovering over me, wanting me to get out of the war zone. We all need a refuge from our grief, but we need the battlefield to win the clash. The reason why I read this and the reason why I'm sharing this is I wasn't ready to get over my grief. I wanted to be with my husband. I wasn't ready to say I need to empty his closet. I wasn't ready to say my husband died. I wasn't ready to say I'm a widow. I wasn't ready to do all that. Until I was ready to do that, I couldn't take on my grief.
Yeah. Yeah.
And people say, you got to get out of the house. They push you. They do this or that. If you're not ready, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Yeah, no, it's you're right in terms of how everyone's going to handle it differently. And the ones that strike me, the ones who just kind of breeze right through.
But they don't breeze through. It'll knock them on their feet later.
You're exactly right. Yeah, that they put on the mask here, but underneath, because it goes into their unconscious, it goes into their shadow or something like that, and it's going to come out in different ways. I always said that when after my mother passed away, she died. I mean, it was very sudden. She wasn't even 72 years old. She just dropped, and we were very close, even though we didn't live, you know. And that next summer, I mean, this was in April, and I'm not sure how many sober moments I had.
Makes sense. I got to do a little shout out because it's kind of exciting. Just last week, I just confirmed with my publisher that I'm working on another book around a similar topic, but not. So it's about personal belongings. What do you do with personal belongings of your loved one that has passed, your parents? Just what do we do with the stuff and things that we have accumulated for years that have some sentimental meanings, but also what do you do with, if you're at the end of a legacy, what do you do with that? There's so many people that have maybe a gun collection. I don't know why I chose that as an example, I don't want a gun in my house. So what do you do with it? But you inherited it. I had a woman that had, her husband collected memorabilia for sports, and she didn't care about one of the pro teams, and she had thousands of dollars. And so in suggestion to her, why don't you donate it to a not-for-profit because they could do it at an auction. So there's just so much stuff of what to do with and collections and emotions and one is right and one is wrong. And I'm going to share how to do it. So I have called the Magic of Six Piles. So be working on that. That will be out next summer.
That's very practical, right?
Yeah, no, I like working on those projects.
Yeah. So people want to learn more about you. They want to get in contact with you, get you for a speaker, whatever. How to?
You could get me through my website. I do have a difficult name for that. It's rachelkodanaz.com, rachelkodanaz.com. Or you could just Google Living with Loss One Day at a Time. My website will come up. Of course, it's available in bookstores and Amazon and everywhere else. If you get it on my website, I do write a personal note. That's the only advantage. So, Jerry, so fun. We always have fun together. On a difficult topic, we still had fun, right?
Exactly.
Because it's life.
And it's about celebrating. My little thing here, I'm not into big, dark funeral sorts of thing. I want to remember the person, the beauty he, she had in my life. Yes, it still gets emotional when I think about them. I get emotional when I think about my dog, my mother. Okay. But I go back and tell the funny stories about, you know, and how I pushed Knox up the mountain climbing those 14ers and, you know, pushed him in a butt and he scrambled up over the top there. And then I went like, okay, so how do I get up there? And he's up there wagging his tail waiting for me.
Right.
Stuff like that. And that's what I'm all about, celebrating the beauty we've had.
And memories warm your heart more than anything else.
Right on. Okay. And before we go, there was one caller called in. I'm not sure if it was someone who was calling in, wanted to talk to Rachel in a moment here. If you call back, because I'm not able to take the calls while we're having this, you're more than welcome to. Rachel is here, and she'll be more than happy to take your call and talk to you personally. But in the meantime, everyone, this is Jerry Fabian, KYGT, LPFM, 102.7, 103.9, visiting here with Rachel Kodanaz, author of Living with Loss. We have this recorded. I will have it on my website early next week. Go to the BighornBookClub.com. BighornBookClub, one word, .com. We'll have it up there, and you can listen to it again at your leisure. And, of course, when Rachel will have the link from her website, too. So definitely go there. It is loaded chock full. I've been there countless times. In fact, I'm on your list. So I get your blogs and everything, and they're always, you know, just right on. You don't overwhelm, but when they come through, they're just so meaningful.
Thank you. So fun. We'll do it again.
Right on. We will.
All right. Bye to your listeners.
You got it. All right. Okay. Now, take care of them. Bye.